Welcome to the Membership Machine Show, talking you through your membership website from initial idea all the way to finished product. Here's your host, Jonathan Denwood.
Welcome back, folks, to the Membership Machine Show. This is episode 32. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the best cameras and mics for you to produce great courses for your target audience. It's a great subject. It's an important one. We're going to be talking about the best dual purpose and cameras that can help you with that around blogging, YouTube, promoting your membership website. I've got my great co-host. He's recovering from surgery. He's pumped up literally with all sorts of drugs and concoctions.
Iced up and ready.
Iced up, pumped up, ready. So how was this week, Spencer?
I'm very happy to say I even said it on my Twitter today. We're thanking everybody for the support. I'm stopping my acute build out phase because my back feels 100% great. My right leg hip walking is a bit deranged, but that's something I can just work on over time. So I've returned to the land of the fully functional living, and I'm going back to talking about WordPress as a service, membership, creator toolkits, stuff like that. And so it's really good. I want to say to anybody who's gone through whatever it is they're going through that it's nice when you peer over the edge into the abyss of darkness of whatever it may be to come back to just mundane, get up and work on stuff, because it really makes me appreciate it more than ever before. You know, just getting up, doing the show, talking to my customers, my clients, just thinking clearly, not being on medicine. So I'm very happy to have erased May of 2023 from my memory.
Like Nietzsche said, you've looked at the abyss. Here we go.
For real.
And there we are. Should be a great show, folks. We're going to go in, like I say, some of the best cameras you should be looking at, some of the best mics, some of the things you need to know about it. It should, like I say, should be really useful. Before we go into the main meat and potato of this great show, I've got a couple major messages from our sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Are you looking for ways to make your content more engaging? Sensei LMS by Automattic is the original WordPress solution for creating and selling online courses. Sensei's new interactive blocks can be added to any WordPress page or post. For example, interactive videos let you pause videos and display quizzes, lead generation forms, surveys, and more. For a 20% off discount for the tribe, just use the code WPTonic, all one word, when checking out and give Sensei a try today.
Hi there, folks. It's Jonathan Denwood here, and I want to tell you about one of our great sponsors, and that's Zolo.com. If you've got a WordPress website, a membership website, and you're looking to link it with a great financial management package, Zolo can provide this solution. So all your bookkeeping needs are done through Zolo. If you need new inbox email functionality and you don't want to pay the high charges that Google will charge you, Zolo offers a great email inbox platform. They've got over 50 apps and services that all integrate fantastic with WordPress at great value levels, and they almost always offer a fully functioning free product as well. So it's just amazing value. Also, if you're a WordPress developer or agency owner, Zolo are looking for great partnerships in the WordPress space. To get all this information, all you have to do, folks, is just go over to Zolo.com, and they have the products that you're looking for. Thank you so much, Zolo, for supporting WP Tonic and the Machine Membership shows. It's much appreciated. We're coming back. Like I say, We've got some great special offers from our major sponsors. Plus, we've got a curated list of the best plugins to help you build a great membership community website in 2023 on WordPress. So saving you a load of time and frustration. You can get all these goodies by going over to WPTonic/deals. WPTonic/deals. And you find all the goodies there, folks. Go over and consume. So, Spence, before we go into the specifics, I just want to do a general outline. And I think the main thing is that obviously you don't, to actually record the courses and lessons, you don't really need anything we're going to be talking about, really, because you can use screen capture software, and you could use a very cheap device to take an image of yourself. But in 2023, the thing that a lot of people avoid, which is crucial, is you've got to market this. And one of the biggest ways of marketing your course pre-launch or when you have launched the course and the business is through video. Video on YouTube, video everywhere, basically. And being that is the case, and you're also going to be utilizing it in the course creation, having one of the main things about course creation, and it's similar to promotional video or YouTube video, is that audio is really important. I know that's counterintuitive, but actually people are more willing to put up with some fuzzy video to some extent, but what they're not prepared to put up with is really rubbish audio. So having good audio is really important for your courses, but also it's going to be a key element to your video to build your audience. So what's your response to what I've just said, and what's your input on this general discussion?
Absolutely. Well, I was actually listening to another pretty well-known guy lately, Jay Klaus, who was having on a few other people from like the Tropical NBA podcast, blah, blah, blah. And they were talking about the evolution of social media, like YouTube, where it used to be how big was your community versus how many likes versus interest level. And so what's really happening today is the algorithms are shifting across YouTube and social media, including podcasting, that as we talked about in last show, it's not just how big your audience is. It's you could have a very small or a reasonably small group of people who are very engaged. And if your metric is to sell something, it really only matters how many people actually come and buy your product from whomever your audience may be. So let me put that into concrete terms. 2 million followers on Twitter or TikTok that 10 people buy your course or your service is not as good in terms of ratio of time spent than 50 people from a very focused niche webinar or a YouTube video that gets 234 views, but 50 of those people buy. So when you're creating content, I would just start with the end game. The end game is, what is it you're trying to do this for? Is it for popularity? Is it because you enjoy just doing it? Or is it really because you're trying to sell something and add to your audience? And I would say in today's world, it's much more important to have an end game of what you're going to sell to the audience before you try to attract them, because it's just too much noise to try to attract everybody. In fact, like we decided after years of doing this to be like the membership machine show, right? Like we focused in on membership tools, people who want to build and own and control their membership site. It could have been 800 other topics that we cover from a WordPress standpoint, but we decided on this. And we also decided to expand it out into just beyond WordPress, because many people don't know that WordPress exists, and who cares anyway? So that's where my goal is. I say, make content purposefully to either drive the audience to your list and then sell them something, or to sell them directly a specific product or service. If you want to be a social media maven or a YouTuber, God bless you, go for it. But that's not really what we're talking about today. We're talking about like purposeful content.
Yeah, I think that's a great insight. Thanks for that, Spence. So let's go into some of the nitty-gritty. I think there are some key parameters here, folks, in this we're going to go through the cameras in the first half of the show. It's not an extensive list. I've got some of the key players, but the first thing you got to understand, are you going to utilize a camera or you're going to utilize webcam? I've got both in front of me. I'm recording this on an actual camera. A camera that I've been utilizing for almost a couple of years now. It's a Canon. It's M15 Mark I I'm utilizing. We're going to be talking about the Canon in a couple, in a short while. You will get better quality, but does it really matter? You can do your initial videos utilizing a webcam. I've got a Logitech in front of me. Logitech do some really great webcams. They do ones that can do 4K. I'm not actually recording. I'm recording this is in high definition, but I'm not recording it in 4K because the kind of content. I know he's shocked. He's spent. What's that about?
I'm putting a point because I'm using a Logitech C920, which we'll talk about the Logitechs. But there's a conversation to be had about why you need equipment, which we'll get to in a second. But if you want, we can dive into that right now. Before
go for it.
Like, here's the thought process that I think is relevant, and from experience. We used to have a big disparity, and I was trying to prove a point, which is kind of silly because it didn't work out so well. Like, you're using clearly. Let me give my origin story. I got into computers originally because I was interested as a pilot in making videos and photographs with old-fashioned, like, DSLR SLR cameras, like film, and then early video from these aircraft that I flew, trikes or whatever. And in those days, the equipment was gigantic and the cost was enormous and blah, blah, blah. You're clearly using, because of my experience, I know, a large depth of field lens. You're clearly using a DSLR camera because I can see that you're up close in focus and behind you is that nice, warm, fuzzy, like, background that is subconscious but wired into any of us who are over 25 years old, because from movie making and so forth, the longer the lens and the greater the depth of field, the more personal and intimate it feels, like in a movie theater. Whereas you'll notice I'm on standard setting. It's a 4K, but it's a C920 webcam. And so you could see, like, in the background, like, just almost as clearly in focus as the stuff behind me, 20 feet behind me, as me. That doesn't give the same feeling, right? I will say, however, from a practical standpoint, that as we'll talk about, operating a 4K DSLR camera comes with a lot of overhead, timing issues, heat issues, battery life issues, like failure rates, whereas operating a plug-and-play USB webcam could not be easier. And now we've got software in the middle. So both of us are porting through our computers into a StreamYard software, which, although its controls are janky, there's other ones I could use as an intermediary to simulate depth of field. So what we're at right now is a place that for most people, if I would say you have some reason you want to be a YouTuber and walk around outside your house with a DSLR, or if you're making like really tons of YouTube content where you have to look fabulous, spend the money on a DSLR camera. If not, just go right to the USB plug and play stuff because that works with anything. And like, my camera is this big and I can adjust it and do stuff. There's no reason to have the overhead of a DSLR anymore because the output's pretty good.
I agree with you a little bit, but I think utilizing a webcam is a good start. But if you're going to really go into video at some stage, you need a full body camera. I think the overheating, I've not had any major overheating problems with this.
It comes after a certain amount of time. So, for example, there's a timing issue on the newer DSLRs, which is awesome. They no longer have a thing, which, by the way, this is a little anecdote, but we've got a little time here. This was a political and a monetary issue. But in the early days, I had a Canon, one of the Rebel 5 or something like that. And it had the ability to record in not 4K, but 1920. The point was, it can only record 25 minutes and then it turned off. And I was like, what the F is going on with that? Turns out it had nothing to do with the capabilities of the camera. It was the politics of the digital video camera makers had forced Congress to impart a rule on the camera makers that their cameras couldn't record more than a certain length of time. Like, are you kidding me? Right. So there's weird stuff like that yeah. I think they've sorted out. Yeah. But the other issue too is price wise. So like we live in a world of plenty, especially post COVID. You can get a DSLR camera or I don't know what they call them, a DSLR, but like the ZV-1, it's not a DSLR, but it's like a pocket.
It's a mirrorless SLR. It's a mirrorless camera.
It's a pocket SLR where you can live in the middle, but your price range is going to be like, whereas a webcam, like I'm using, is tens of dollars. You're going to go into the hundreds of dollars.
You can get
into the thousands of dollars.
You can get a webcam for 80. Some of the more fancier Logitech are around 100, 150, 190. When you get into the full body mirrorless cameras that we're going to be talking about, the price range, especially if you want to go above 4K, because there's people that want to take video that's 4K, 8K, I apologize, 8K. Yeah. You can't show it on YouTube on most web-based platforms, and the editing and the equipment to edit and produce video at 8K is a professional level or quasi professional level enterprise. So let's go into it. One of the really popular choices is the Sony ZV-E10. It's around $699. You can get better deals. You can pay more.
Are you on the Sony ZV-1 or did you jump to which one did you start with?
It's the Z1 and the E.
I'm showing some screen stuff. This one here, right?
Yeah. This one, it's really excellent for YouTube. It's got a pretty good sensor, can handle 4K, it's lightweight. It's become a real darling in the YouTube crowd, the professional crowd. If you go onto YouTube and put in what are recommendations for YouTube videos, this is going to be in the list of what people are talking about. It's got some features that if you're into the kind of YouTube blogging outside, but it's also got features that if you've got a static setup, which I've got here, I've got a kind of fixed setup. I can get up and running in less than 2 minutes to knock out a video because I'm producing I'm putting video everywhere on LinkedIn, on YouTube, on Twitter, on my website.
Do you have this camera?
No, I've got the Canon, actually.
Okay, but like, I want to point something out. I'm not trying to harp on this. I like Sony products and so forth, but like, you really have to read between the lines because like, there's a lot of 5 stars on this, but there's a couple not 5 stars. For example, here, this person's suggesting that it doesn't live stream, right? So the output maxes out at 1080 at 30 hertz and has 150 milliseconds, which is like 1.5 seconds of latency just to get the video camera out. So if you're trying to do that, like as a webcam, you're going to find frustration. For example, what happens is, let's say you and I were doing a show, my camera's recording. Well, my mouth will be delayed from what I'm saying, and or the quality will not be equal. So you really just have to be careful what you buy for what purpose.
You do have to do your research. The new one, the ZV-E10, has resolved some of those.
Yeah, but like that's the thing. Like I'm not saying this camera's bad and this camera's good. I'm saying like when you look at a camera, you can't just look at it like, oh, it's sexy and whatever, because you're not using it to take pictures. You have to look at the features that you're going to use. For example, like I'm particularly using this most of the time for streaming or for a webcam. Why is that useful? Well, First of all, you can't see my screen here, but like I have a big 43-inch monitor, and mounted at the top on a very lightweight, flexible arm is my webcam. Because I spend so little on it, that's a fixture. That's just there. And I use the digital thing. You've seen me do it when I stand up, like go, I can move myself around without touching the, yeah. Like, I mean, literally, here's the Logitech software. So when you're using another camera, like, you know, here,
I just use the manual. I just
you just thought that my room was moving. But the point is, you need to look at those details of what you're primarily using it for, because you said a moment ago, not untrue, a DSLR, if you're going to be, you know, professional video maker, is useful. I'd say yes if you are either in a studio where you are committing that camera to where you're using it, like yours right now, you're committing it. You don't probably walk around with it. Or you've got it as a handheld thing and you're outside in the real world doing like Casey Neistat YouTube videos and you got like
that. There's all different scenarios. You're going to have to make, say, so you basically, you've got to do your studying. I'm just pointing.
It's a $700 commitment. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know,
you could spend a lot more money. The Sony have cameras. There's a couple others that do 8K. Well, they're around $3,000-$4,000. I think these are beginners, because you've got to buy a camera. You're going to probably have to buy a really good lens. You've got the lighting. There's a lot of additional, the mic, which is really important. The Sony ZV, look at the latest one. The one that was in...
The latest Sony?
The latest Sony, which is the E10. But the thing is, going for a slightly one that's still out there, that's not the latest model, you're going to probably get a better deal. But you're going to have to look at what your requirements are.
Right.
So let's go on to a really popular one, which is the Canon M50 Mark II. Like I say, I've got a Mark I. Mm-hmm. This has been a popular camera in YouTube. I think the Sony's got a bit more popular, but this is a solid choice.
Are you using the default lens?
No.
The 50mm lens?
No, I'm not. I'm utilizing a lens that's almost as expensive as the camera.
Well, okay, so let's be honest with this, because, I mean, I'm not trying to bait you on this.
You would never do that, would you? Never.
No, but like people don't get this, and I just want to be clear, because this is a valuable thing in today's world. There was a time when the only way you could simulate depth of field or higher detail was through an actual lens. And so anybody who did real camera work back in the day realized a little tiny 50mm lens, this is a 15 to 45mm range, right? That little doodad that they put on there isn't going to give you any depth of field at all. It's going to give you like basically...
You're absolutely correct, but I chose to buy a Sigma, which is about 400. The nice thing about Canon compared to Sony is... There's loads of secondhand lenses out there.
But at a price, $400.
Well, no, not if you're buying secondhand. There's loads.
$200 to $400. You're going to spend a couple $100 more.
Yeah, right? You probably are.
And you're not getting it for $50.
No, probably not. But I spent almost $500 on this Sigma, and it's the one that's recommended, and it does the job, and it's rock solid. But apart from the, you are totally correct. You got to know that. But it just depends if you're going to do this face to face, kind of broadcasting. But it is a rock solid choice. You know, I've been really happy with my Canon, with the lens setup. Did my research, and I've been using it for 2 years, and it's been rock solid, and it's done what I wanted it to do. So I don't think with either the Sony or the Canon, you're going to have to do your research, which Spencer's pointed out. You know, you just can't, you're going to have to do a bit of research, but these are two rock solid choices.
But for the thing you want to achieve, like we don't have to make this hard. It's not a threat of like, oh, you're stupid if you do this. It's, I like to use it as like the Pareto's principle, 80-20, right? So if I can go out and I'm intending to do like, well, I'll use myself just as an example. I make videos, or, you know, other than May of 2023, I make videos most every day, and I'm in the camera as well as sharing the screen. I have a studio in my basement with a DSLR, and it has a teleprompter, it has lights. It's awesome. But I'm up here in front of this gorgeous window, sunny, looking out into my yard. And 9 out of 10 times I go like, does my audience give a flying, you know what, about whether I use the depth of field camera in the studio? And how much more likely am I to make the content when I'm in the mood, and so on and so forth? Now, there's control settings of being in my basement studio because there's no light and no daylight. It's all the same all the time. But man, it feels much better to be up here all the time. So when I say 80-20, I measure out a couple things. Why am I making the content? Does the content quality have more importance than just getting the content out there? What's the cost of the investment in the stuff, right? Like, I'm fine if I had to spend $1,000. I spent way more than that on building out my studio. But at the end of the day, like, most all of the content that's made me my livelihood is spent in a little circle in the corner of a screen share, which is being done with computer equipment.
Yeah, I think you made a great point. You know, I've spent about slightly over $1,000, but the main thing is it didn't cost that much, but I am surrounded with lighting. If you're utilizing a mirrorless camera, one of these, they do require, to get a reasonable result, they are more lighting sensitive than a webcam.
Like, I want to show people something. You can't see my thing. I have this thing for my back. It's like a hook.
I thought you were utilizing it for other purposes.
This is what I use, like, in a call. I just want to show, like, different. I have these huge windows with curtains, and like, watch this. See, like, I can tweak the natural lighting. See how the left side of my face is lighting up a bit?
You look beautiful.
I know, but I'm just getting to the point. Like, if you're in an environment where you can have natural light facing a window, if you're blessed with that, or you can set it up like with a laptop, sometimes that's the poor person's version of getting the results. Because if you've got great light and a modern inexpensive webcam on a laptop even, you can get comparable results to a studio with really expensive or at least hard to adjust lighting. You know, and I can do the same thing over here. Like, I can make more or less. And so what I want people to understand is that I'm a guerrilla content creator, guerrilla problem solver, whether it comes to software, whether it comes to stuff. I love the idea of having my high-end gear. But what I love more is when I can find the 20% cost way to get 80% of the results.
Yeah. I think, but I've got a setup right in front of my computer. I can move it up and forth. I've got a setup that allows me to do video instantaneously, and you're right about that. A couple other options here. If you're looking to do photography with video, not a kind of static setup that me and Spencer have been talking about a bit, there are a couple of options. One is the Fuji X-S10. That's been around a couple of years, but for what you can do if you're into photography, video, for about $1,000, you can get it around that. What it offers, it's quite appealing. A newer one, which I added, which I didn't give to Spencer, I just added it about half an hour ago, is the Panasonic Lumix S5. That is a more up. It's been out for a couple of months and it's pushed a lot and it's really very impressive. But you're looking at a couple of $2,500. But you can do a lot of 4K. I don't think with the Fuji X-S10 you can do 4K. But it does all the other kind of photography. If you're a photographer, that's why I included it, because the price is attractive. So you're going to have to do your research. And then finally, we got the webcam.
Did we talk about just now the S10? This is the one you're referring to, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're at this is the 922.
Yes,
the webcam. But I just want everybody to understand, too, what's interesting is they have two other models. I happen to be still using right now the 920, which is hard to distinguish. But even the 922 is only $99. They've also got this 4K Pro, which I don't feel like most people.
You're totally right to point that out, because you pay 100. I've got one of those, but I just got it as a backup, and I got it. So I use it for my Zooms because I can flip it up on straight away.
Right.
There's a bit more set up with the camera, even though I've got a quick setup.
Let's break these out for a second. Because there's like a lot of models, and during COVID, this was crazy black market stuff. Like they were like a guy would come to your house.
Give me $1,000 in cash, I'll give you a webcam. Yeah.
Okay. Give you a webcam. So the original 920,
especially in Chicago.
I mean, because I had kids from home working in school, and I had to sell a kidney to get a webcam for my kid. So this 922 I've been using for a while. Now, what I like about it is in this show, I'm only broadcasting at 720p. If you're new to video, like 720 is like the frame size. So like 1280 wide by 720 high. If you're the next level up, it was 1920 by 1080. Then 4K is 32 something by 1920 by 1060, whatever. I forget the exact number, but you keep going like times two or exponential. Point being, for a normal Zoom call, for this show, for my web videos on YouTube, the videos themselves will be done typically at 1080. I don't do 4K videos on YouTube, although if it happens, great. Nobody needs to see the screen that detailed. 1080 is a good number. This works well to show me on the screen. This works well for fast Zoom. This works well for our show where it's not being broadcast at 1080. There's a version of this that had like this little, I don't know, it's no longer available, a little flip down so that they couldn't see you picking your nose at work. But you don't need that. Now, the 930, I don't know who even uses this. This is a weird oddball. This was a 1080 version of that 920 camera, but I don't really see this for anybody using it. What I see more is I see the 922 that we talked about, which is where we started, and I see this 4K.
Yeah.
But I've also seen this little doodad, this little cutie that people use like instead of a GoPro, but it's like, but here's the cool thing. Your whole range of cost is like from $99 to $169. You can't go wrong, no matter which one you pick. No. Even if you want to go 4K, like
I totally agree with you. If I was, you know, if you're starting out, folks, looking at the Logitech, Spence is correct. You know, you're starting out and cost. You want to keep the costs to a reasonable level. These Logitech webcams are great. But if you want to move it, you know, the next level up is one of these mirrorless cameras. But he's also right. You've got to take into account that you're probably going to have to buy another lens.
You can't walk around with this. Like, let's be honest with the limits. Right? The benefits are whether you do 720p, 1080p, or 4K. I don't think anybody, by the way, is doing 60 frames per second, because that just looks weird and it makes you be like weird video mode. But at 30 frames per second, I'd say that the sweet spot at 1080p, you're good to go. And this camera is $99, or you pick one of the other ones. You just get it and lock it into your desktop, because that could be a B camera roll, or it could be an additional thing to your DSLR. If you're using a DSLR, because you're going to go and do other stuff, or you want to use it for family trips, whatever, God bless you, get one. But just understand that, like, this is not going to walk around. You're not going to, like, take your webcam, unplug the USB like a DSLR camera. On the other hand, you don't need a battery adapter. You don't need an extra lens. You don't have to worry about whether it's on or off. I just turn on my computer, turn it off, and the USB kicks in. So get both if you're really into it, because you can afford the extra $99 to throw in a webcam while you're getting a DSLR. But if you're just going to get one, start with the webcam.
Right, see how you go. I thought that was a good summary. We're going to go for our middle break, our other sponsors.
I'm very prescriptive today.
You are. As I can say, we're going to go for our break. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Hey, it's Spence from LaunchFlows.com. If you've been looking for a fast and easy way to create powerful sales funnels on WordPress, then look no further than LaunchFlows. In just minutes, you can easily create instant registration, upsells, downsells, order bumps, one-click checkouts, one-time offers, custom thank you pages, and best of all, no coding is required. For as little as $50 per year, you can own and control your entire sales funnel machine with LaunchFlows. Get your copy today.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. I just want to point out, if you're looking for a great host for your WordPress membership community website, why don't you have a look at WP Tonic? We specialize in hosting membership websites built on WordPress. We provide over $4,000 worth of software, all fully licensed, plus a load of other features that make building your membership website on WordPress a lot easier. Go over to WP Tonic, have a look at the plans we offer. Very competitive with what we are offering, and we'd love you to choose us as your support hosting provider. So let's go, like I said in the intro, something which is sound, it's counterintuitive, but it's really important because, like I said, and I think you agreed, Spence, the people will put up with certain level of video, but what they won't put up with is really crappy sounds in their videos. The main thing you've got to understand, the broad thing, is are you going to utilize a UBS mic? And I've been using
USB mic.
Or are you going to utilize a mic that needs to be inputted into a sound deck?
Yeah.
I used to do, many years ago, I used to do a podcast with an individual, and I used to call him the Sound Nuts.
Conrad?
Yeah. Oh, God, he's gone totally bonkers.
The actor from the Wild Wild West.
And he spent thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on sound equipment. And I'm utilizing a mic. I've been using it for 6 years, and I've had people say to me, "Your sound's really fantastic, Jonathan." It does about 80% or 90%. To get that last 10%, you would have to spend thousands. It just isn't worth. And I think you kind of hinted that in the first half of the show when it came to the audio, didn't you? So I think, first of all, would you agree with what I just outlined?
I'll go through it the same way I did with the video. So the early days of audio, just to get like a little geeky here, you had no way to get into the computer unless you had a specialty thing called a sound card. I don't know if many people here are old enough to remember a sound card, but if you had a PC, you literally had a separate card with its own drivers that had inputs. Typically, it was a 1/8-inch phono jack as the basis, which then went to like a headset with a mic, and it had like three rings instead of two rings and all this geeky stuff. And you had this real janky plastic and metal, blah, blah, blah. And then if you were professional, like I play music, so you had a 1/4-inch phono jack, mono or stereo. But in order to get that in, you needed to go through a mixing board, which was typically an external device that would allow you to adjust inputs. And many people still do that. Today, there's a middle ground where there are USB-connected mixing boards. So the PC or the laptop has a USB connector to a physical board, but then the pros either use 1/4-inch phono jacks or what we call XLR plugs, which are these weird three-prong things that are really protected from noise distortion and so forth, but are really heavy and expensive and whatever. So there's three levels here. In the old days, the pro level was unquestionably like the only way to go because the middle level and the janky level were just ridiculous. The top level today is pure mixing board, that goes into a pro mixer with XLR connectors, real sliders and mixers, digital controls, onboard recording, and then it can outboard or input to your machine, you know, whatever your laptop or something is through USB. The middle level is a lighter mixing board with like various degrees of USB and other connectors, but you still have like buttons and controls. By the way, I want to show you, I bought myself a treat. This is
because you moved away from your bike.
Before, I'm not using it, but before I went down in May, I bought myself a Stream Deck. This is an example.
Oh, yeah, okay. Good one.
Not a mixer per se, but you have these buttons that can be, you know, you've got one too. Mm-hmm. So the point is, something like that is like, I don't know, $80. You can have this really cool interface for doing like, but then at the bottom level is just what I'm doing every day. So this is actually a $39 microphone. I bought the F Fine on a goof because previously I'd used all of the Logitech. I'd used all the Snowball stuff like from these guys. But on a goof, I bought this one. This is over a year ago. $39, crazy. Like, I'm not saying I sound the best of the best of the best, but I record for a living on other stuff. And like, I cannot tell the difference between this and the $300, $400 microphones that were tested. And so what I'm saying is the quality of the stuff, if you've got it set up properly, like for example, this is on a standalone stand, not connected to my computer. So you don't get this kind of weird stuff. Like, remember a couple months ago, I was bugging you. You had that hard drive that was just spinning all over going into the microphone.
I silenced it.
Okay. So if you set up properly where you isolate your mic, if you have USB connector, it's $39. And I mean, like, $99 camera, $39 mic. I'm making my livelihood here, folks. I mean, that's it. So, yeah.
So let's go quick. Let's start with a expense. Well, it wasn't at the time. Let's start with a Shure SM7B. Shure, in the professional audio, quasi-professional podcasting world, you're not going to go far wrong by buying Shure, but
this is XLR, by the way. Anybody who's looking to see that, that's an XLR connector.
That you're going to have to use one of those funky connectors and have us.
Can I make a? I'm a little interruptive today. I apologize, but like, there's all kinds of booms around, and one of the things that I find interesting is it's kind of like a pet peeve, but like, okay, so I have this thing that swings up and around, but like, there was this thing for a while where it was like super cool for YouTubers and everybody to have their mic would be dangling down.
Yeah, I've got a dangler.
You'd be like, hey, I'm in my mic. It'd be comparable to me doing the show like this. It'd be like, hey, look at my big mic that is in front of my mouth and stuff like that. And so what I...
You're going to have to watch this, folks. If you're listening, you have to go to the WP.
I'm saying what's more professional. Like, everybody was trying to be like, you know, like an old radio guy like Howard Stern, where it's like you put the thing in at a certain... Like, we don't need to do that anymore. So sure, it's okay. I do this thing. You know, you keep your mic about this distance from your mouth or a fist. Yeah. Keep consistent. But we don't need to put it in front of our face and make it part of the show anymore. That was a thing that for a while in the podcast community was a shtick. Yeah. And I always found that hilarious.
But the Shure is a really quality product. If you got the money and you want to set, but you're going to have a soundboard. There's a lot of setup here. But if you're really looking for that top tier and you got the money and you think it's really important, you're not going to go far wrong in quality utilizing that. A really popular one, some sound snobs really don't like the Blue Yeti. I think for what it is, but there's so... When it came out, it was a really... It
was more money, too.
It was really popular because it was a lot cheaper than a lot of the other options like the Shure and some of the others that were pushed by all the sound experts. But
I was using all the Snowball stuff. So, for example, what I find interesting here is, I didn't realize this, but I think Logitech must have bought Blue.
Oh, right. Am I done? I didn't know
that. Well, because look, it's we're on, I could be wrong here. Maybe Logitech is just selling it, but like Blue was a company and they had the notable product for me was the Snowball. Because the Snowball was just an amazing quality. It was less expensive than the Yeti, but they were both USB. And I'm wondering here, see, it's all under Logitech now. So I am almost 100% sure
Logitech I wasn't aware of that, but
But to your point, to our bigger point, I read the reviews. People on YouTube are very clear when they test stuff, right? And I'm going to argue in favor of the fact that the reason I even ended up with this one was they like I was just sitting home one weekend, just like thousands of products to choose. And like at the end of the day, the $400 or the $300 or $200, nobody could tell me that there was a difference. And when they did the actual side-by-side tests, like literally this thing kept coming up like totally worth it. I mean, I'm not saying this is the only thing to buy, but we're in a world where you can literally get a $49 or $39 product that competes with a $400 product. It's just about whether you need the
Well, I think you're talking about getting that last 10 or 5%. If you're not bothered, it's not worth paying the money. Some people, they want to get that last 10 to 5%. It's really important to them and they want to spend that money. So well,
it is the difference of like XLR and pro cables and stuff. I mean, there is a physical difference. There's another thing too that we didn't talk about, but it's worth mentioning. When you're doing your audio setup, you'll notice, for example, there's a thing, I don't want to get too like carotid versus omnidirectional.
Yes, right? You're right. I was in two minds if we should be.
We can do it like real quick. So carotid mic versus omnidirectional. Omnidirectional is one where the pattern of the mic is like circular or it looks like two circles like side by side. A carotid mic is very directional. It's like a V shape.
That's the last thing you would say about this show. It's directional. Right,
exactly. So you have to decide, because you'll notice here, for example, even in their own pictures, you see they're doing stuff here where this is a carotid mic, but it's very directional out the end. Whereas notice how my mic here, this is carotid from the side. If I talk like this, it's different than if I talk like this. So you have to decide for yourself, maybe aesthetically or also like your setup, what do you really want to do? Because like a mic in your face like that is different than a coming in from the side or the top. So that's something that's not a big deal. But like people, when they set this up, you can't just plug it in and assume it's going to work. You have to literally understand. Well,
I think that was one of the things that affected Blue Yeti, because a lot of people, it had certain setups that they didn't explain that coherent, and people would just set it up incorrectly and they would get crap results. And then, you know what the internet is, you know, drama, having a go at things, even though you have no idea what the hell you're talking about. That doesn't stop half the population going on the bendy, doesn't it? But the Blue Yeti, it's a solid. But I think its problem is what you just outlined. You can cough up $50 and get something that's
you can see right here. Look at this, because like
it is mostly audio this show, but
I am saying, but like if you're looking at this picture, they have a little picture here, and it says like yes, talking to the side of the mic. No, don't talk into the top of the mic. But it's like buried into like 20 pages of stuff.
It did, 20 pages. But it's got a nice inbuilt solid stand. It's really quite well made. I've got one here, and I've got it available as a backup, and I hardly use it now.
But same problem. Like with this Blue Snowball, they had the same stand. Can't use it. Why? Because if you put it on the desk and you type or use your mouse, you get this during the show. You need a separate, like, isolating bracket or something. Yes. So anyway, this is all interesting.
On to the next one, the Rode NT USB microphone. Well, the they've got a big reputation, a bit like Shure. It's... I'm not sure, but they've got for kind of micro mics and pretty good quality.
I use them for all the portable mics. So they're really well known for their shotgun mics. So, for example, even in my studio with the DSLR, I have a Rode battery powered, but it has an adapter for AC, Rode shotgun mic that sits on top of the DSLR. So weirdly enough, in the studio, if you have a totally non-noise-filled environment, you can use a shotgun mic just like they do when they're shooting sitcoms. You know, there's a dude who's got a pole and he's like tilting it in, but it's always 5 feet above everybody's head. So it stays out of the frame, but it picks up your voice really well, better than this thing right in your face. But you have to have a controlled environment. Now, for example, this is, again, geeky. I'm in my office space here in my house, which is kind of open. A shotgun mic would not be really super good there because a shotgun mic would pick up every little nuance of everything in the background around me, the birds chirping and so forth. I need a mic that's carotid right in my face. A third choice, which we're not talking about here because it's impractical, would be a lavalier mic. But it's really effective to have a lavalier mic with a USB adapter. I often will use it when I'm doing some shots because it can go inside your shirt and it only picks up like literally right
and
here.
And I think they do a good setup. If you're going to other people's offices to do interviews for podcasts, it's a lot more expensive than the cable. They do a wireless mic you can put on a thing and you can both interview. But I think that's around $400 or $500.
Well, there's the poor man's version of the nut. So, for example, if you wanted to do interviews, nowadays they've got these kits where they could be two of these USB mics. You could have one in front of each person on a stand and it goes through a mixer, or you just have two USB connectors and it works brilliantly. Second choice, which I would do, I have two inexpensive lavalier mics that are also USB adapters. But what I liked about the lavalier mic was I have an adapter for my iPhone, so I can use the iPhone as a poor man's really good digital recorder.
But I could
also use the iPhone, where it's an amazing microphone, by the way, on an iPhone 13 or 14. But if I'm in an outside noisy environment, I could just connect the lavalier mic to the iPhone, put it on a stand, and now I'm like talking into it in 4K with depth of field, everything else, but the lavalier mic doesn't pick up all the ambient noise. So there's lots of ways of doing it that today are optional that are of a much lower cost of investment than what in the past you had to really say, like, how much am I going to spend $1,000 or $2,000 on, versus now you can have it all for $1,000. You know, you can have every option in a bag.
And let's finish off the one that I utilize, and it's the Audio Technica AT2020.
$99.
They normally got some deals around, not always. Sometimes you can get it at around $79.
That's awesome. I mean, that proves
I think you can get it as USB as well. Get the USB one, I would suggest.
Probably, because like to convert an XLR and schlep a XLR, if you've never played guitar, XLR cable is quite thick and heavy, and those connectors are like...
Yeah. I'm using the USB. I just think for what you're paying, and they've got a great reputation. But like say, Spencer, you know, you pointed out you can buy their problem is you can buy our competitors for $50. But on the other hand, if you want somebody that's got a track record, and I think it's a pretty fair price.
$100 is a no-brainer. I mean, that's
yeah. Like, I would have thought so. You would have thought so. I mean,
$400 versus $100.
Yeah,
that's like $40 versus $100. Who cares? But $100 versus $400. I mean, that's ridiculous because you can literally you get your webcam, your two mics, lavalier mics, a bag. I mean, you can get like your whole setup for $400 versus, you know. And God forbid you go for a DSLR camera. Like, again,
it's quite amazing, really. So I think, like Spence said, I think for about $300 to $400, you can get a really nice setup. The next setup, you're probably looking anything between $1,000 and $1,200. Mm-hmm. Looking at one of the Sony or the Canon, you're looking at, you're probably looking at something, because, yeah, the camera with a lens, you're probably looking about 900 to 1,000. You can buy the USB mic, the Autotech, I would recommend. And then you got the lighting. And you will, if you're using one of these mirrorless cameras, unless you've got a lot of natural light around where you're going to record, you're going to have to get some lighting. The good news is you can get a good lighting kit. I'm surrounded by lighting actually all over here. But you can get some good reasonable kits for a couple of $100 at the most that will produce enough light.
And a lot of YouTubers don't even do that. A lot of YouTubers, for example, or if you're doing in a setup where fixed, you can do a cowboy light setup. Like downstairs, I have an inexpensive cowboy light. It's an array of three stand-up poles with like a big filter and a big box.
Yeah, that's what I've got.
Take up a shit ton of space, but it was cheap and it folds up if I ever took it. But I like that because I can turn off all of the lights in my studio and I can have 100% control over like the ambiance of it. Whereas if you're in a normal situation, they have these ring lights or these very inexpensive LED lights that you can just add to your monitor to fill as you need. Like, for example, here, one of the disadvantages is if I do a recording at night, as I often do, I look like I'm in the Munster family because, like, it's just like the screen on my face and I don't have ambient lighting. I just don't care. But I was thinking about this year, maybe as a project this summer, maybe going back into the studio. And then you can say, like, what's the ambiance you want? You have a nice lit background. A lot of YouTubers, a lot of people, my friend Mac, or if you're Paul Charlton or whatever, they have Jamie from Poodle Press a little bit. They have ambiance where it's dark and they have like lit objects on the wall or there's some colored lighting. And I actually think that's a better way to go because then the focus is on you as your face, but the background is not a big issue. Obviously, your normal room is set up very nicely as a normal daylight setting. But there's lots of choices when you can control not having windows. If you have windows, just get like a little LED light or two of them so you can bounce off one side or the other, and then you won't look so scary. I mean, even right now...
It took a lot to make me not look scary.
But I'm saying, like, even right now, like, if I'm sitting down, just things like camera angle, I'm standing at the moment, but, like, if I simulate when I'm sitting down, like, the angle of the camera is different, and my head is up, and if you're over 45, your chin should be looking up at 45 degrees. So those are little nuances, but you know, you can really change the value of whatever cameras you're using by just how you light it and how you set things up.
Yeah, I think it's been a great show. I think we're giving you some clear, obviously Spencer really knows what he's talking about. I know a little bit less about it, but I know enough to make some educated decisions, and hopefully we're giving you enough info. All the links to everything we say will be in the show notes. You can go to the WP Tonic website to get those links. So, Spencer, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and what you're up to?
Do you notice I like just de-aged like 10 years from just sitting down and looking up with the light coming in from the right? Like, it's such a funny thing, but take an iPhone and just do this sometime and you'll see. Like, you can find me at SpencerForeman.com. That's also my social media handle. My main business is at WPLaunchify.com. And this year I'm focusing, now that I'm back from the brink, on WordPress as a service, right? So for content creators of all type, we're creating ready-to-go kits along with the personal service you deserve and want to decomplicate just getting on with it, very much in the way we're talking about here, because people have spent so much time tinkering with WordPress. And I was joking, and I love WordPress to death because we still use it as a core, but like I spend half of my time figuring out what the people are breaking at WooCommerce and WordPress and everything else. So like the WooCommerce folks, God bless you, I love you, but like they literally just decided to turn on some Gutenberg block stuff the other day that just randomly breaks everything before it. And then nobody ever thought to ask, like, hey, I wonder if anything else is using these filters that we're turning on. So I think that most of my clients and your clients have decided, I would love it if I could just have my business with a solution. And I don't really care what's inside. I'll leave that to Jonathan and Spencer. And that's kind of what we do.
Yeah, it's just controlling yourself. The beauty of WordPress, folks, is ownership. You've got a lot of options, but freedom. But you know, control yourself, you know, hopefully listen to this podcast. We give you some core product services that we think are the best on the WordPress platform. Sometimes we disagree, but I think everything we talk about is credible, good quality. Just control your enthusiasm, because you can go absolutely potty on WordPress, which is bonkers. You just need to control that. We will be back next week with another fab show. I've really enjoyed this. It's brought memories of the Sound Nazi back to me. We will be back next week, folks. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Membership Machine Show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes, and leave a rating to support the show. Until next time.